Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. And if you ate like I ate this last weekend, you probably feel like you aged a little bit. But I hope everybody had a wonderful Passover or Easter or both, if you celebrate both, as I do in my family. I hope everybody enjoyed themselves immensely and that it turned out to be everything you hoped it would be. We have an incredibly interesting show tonight. I have three of the four authors of a book called Permission to Die. Now, they have been here before. It was before the book was published, but the book's been out for about 6 months now. They have a lot of anecdotal feedback. They have a lot of questions that have come up. And I think that you're going to find that the conversation, which we didn't get to finish last time they were here, is still so important to have. It really is a conversation that must be had, and we're going to talk about that. It's a subject that I talk about regularly with my clients, and it's what I talk about regularly with my presentations. So we're going to talk about it, and I think you're going to enjoy it. I want to read the bios of the four guests as soon as I find them. I had them all perfectly separated just a minute ago. Here they go. Kelly Kintz is here. Kelly is a licensed clinical social worker and a clinical field supervisor for the state of Florida. Her educational background includes a Master of Social Work degree from Barry University, a Bachelor of Social Work degree from Tampa, Florida. She has a postgraduate certification in National Institute for Clinical Application of Behavioral Medicine's Shame and Anxiety Trainings. She's an advanced facilitator in advanced care planning for end-of-life discussions, and she's very involved in the PULSED initiative, which one of my other guests is a leading proponent of. Dr. Kramer is here, Dr. Eric Kramer. He obtained his undergraduate degree in psychology at Glassboro State College in New Jersey. He attended Temple Medical School and subsequently did his residency in neurology at the Pennsylvania Hospital. Dr. Kramer currently serves as division head of neurology for a medical specialist of the Palm Beaches. He holds the title of clinical associate professor in neurology at the Miller School of Medicine at the University of Miami. And Dr. Stuart Bagatelle is here. Dr. Bagatelle has been here often. I think I'm going to get a seat with a name on it just for Dr. Bagatelle. He's a good friend of mine, I have to confess. We've known each other a long time. He is the program director of the University of Miami JFK Internal Medicine Residency Program and is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Dr. Bagatelle has served as the chairman of the hospital's ethics committee since January 2010, and in that role has spearheaded the implementation of the PULSED paradigm in his community. He is a core member of Florida's PULSED task force. PULSED, for those of you who don't know, and we will talk about it, is Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, and it's a really interesting subject, which we could do a whole show on. In fact, have done a whole show. He got his MD from Tulane University School of Medicine in New Orleans, stayed there after Katrina, completed his internal medicine training, and became chief resident before being promoted to associate program director. And the fourth author who is not here is Rabbi Anthony Fratello. And the first word there, Rabbi, should tell you why he's not here. It is Passover, and it is clearly a time that he is incredibly busy, but he is one of the four authors of Permission to Die. He is at Temple Sharai Shalom in Boynton Beach for the last 14 years, and that synagogue has grown to over 550 families with 300 children in its religious school programs. So guys, welcome back to Oh My God. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Terrific. So the book is out. It's been about, I've seen the reviews on Amazon. So I have two questions. How do you feel about what the feedback that you're getting? And did it confirm the reasons that you wanted to write this book?
So Kelly's pointing to me, so I guess I'll go first. The reasons that we wrote the book, I think, are individual. And obviously, we can each answer for ourselves. But I think that we've gotten over the point where we've sold as many books as we can to friends and family. And what the feedback has generally been is that this is an incredibly important book. This is a book that everyone should read. It's incredibly, however, hard to get it in front of people. So I'll go to a party and somebody will say, I heard you wrote a book. And they'll say, well, you know, what was the topic? And I say, death and dying. And that's the end of the conversation. Because
the only thing worse is if you said you're an insurance salesman.
Exactly. Because it's a conversation that needs to be had, but no one can have it for the exact reason that the conversation at a party will end when I bring up the topic. So I'm very pleased. I think that the reception has been great. We've sold, actually, and Kelly may have the details and statistics, but a lot more books than we thought we would. And the goal is to help people know that it's around, and for so many people, for so many reasons, to try and get it in front of people. But no, I've been very personally gratified and pleased, and now we're having more events and hopefully bring it to more people.
That's great. Anybody else want to add?
Yeah, you know, this is Stuart Bagatelle. I wrote the book really for my own well-being. You know, I teach my residents when they're taking care of patients, when they're in the room with a patient or in the hospital room with a patient, that it's all about the patient, right? When you're in that room, you got to put all your garbage aside and just be there for that patient. But when you leave the room, you got to take care of you. And so when I left the room on a number of occasions dealing with death and dying, I wrote in a journal. It was therapeutic. And then it was an idea that came years later that, hey, let's put this book together. And I had all these wonderful, rich stories that I had already written. So for me, a lot of my stories in the book are just keeping me well because I deal with it every day.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because I actually talk about all of us and many of my guests on the radio show. We're all in at some way, shape, or form in the healthcare continuum. And I tell everybody all the time, when you walk in to see a client of mine, a patient of yours, or whatever, leave your junk outside, because they don't care and they don't need to deal with it. And you can deal with it when you come out. But when you do that, if you're full all in, all right, then you start to understand what's happening to the person on the other side that you're talking to, and it can be unbelievably powerful. It really can be very, very emotional. Kelly, did you want to add anything to that?
I did. I think I echo what both Eric and Stuart had said, that as we began this journey, one of the things that we used to do together in the hospital is that I would actually partner with Stuart to teach some of the residents how to deliver bad news. And that was a seminar that we did on a regular basis. And one of the things that came to our attention was that students, medical students, social work students, nursing students aren't taught how to deliver bad news. And it's extremely fear-inducing for them, and it causes them a great amount of pain, which then is transferred on to those patients and those families. And so when we broke that barrier, and then when we went into this ethics meeting and had this consultation that really drove us all to want to write this book, it became really apparent that, as Stuart said, this was an effort in self-care for us. That actually helps us be better clinicians, because we're actually identifying the emotional angst that people fear in that room.
So the conversation about death and dying, again, I close most of my presentations on this very subject, and I try to add a touch of humor to it, because, you know, I tell everybody that when somebody passes away, that is a time to celebrate life, not to figure out what somebody else is doing. So I joke, you don't want to be buried on the first floor, the third floor, the fifth floor, side by side, head to toe, with your first husband, your second husband, or your boyfriend, under a tree, out in the shade, you know, out in the sun. You want your ashes scattered where, by who? It doesn't matter. Whatever you do, tell somebody, all right, because you want that to go smoothly so that people can now celebrate your life. Because there are national treasures in our midst. You all deal with people who have accomplished amazing things in their lives. So we all get that. I don't know about you, but I haven't done my own final planning. And I know that I need to. I'm talking a lot about it lately. Why is this such a hard conversation? What is it that makes this conversation so difficult for people to face?
So to answer that question, obviously, would be all night, all right. night. But there's so many of the things what we do as people, and Cal can talk about it, Stu, and anybody, you don't need a degree, is we do what we're told and we do what we've been shown. And when we have models, we behave in that way. And one of the reasons, going back to the reason I wrote the book, is to try and change the model. It is painful. It's incredibly painful to lose someone who you love. But we are taught how to react to that. We are shown that this is the proper way to react to that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be. Sure, we would love a person to be with us forever. But we can, and I think in some of the lessons in the book and some of the things that I'm trying to get across, is let's celebrate the life not when they die, but let's celebrate the life during the life. Let's understand this is it going to happen. And we have that so much. I have a story right now that I'm dealing with. I'm sure we all do, medical professionals. But you know, we are taught how to react, and I think that we can destigmatize, and I think we can change the narrative to say, yes, this is a great time, going back to Little Big Man and the Native American who goes into the woods and says, this is a great day to die, and have us, so that while we'll never be happy that we're losing a loved one, be able to accept it way beyond that moment, where it just becomes soul-ripping and so painful. It just doesn't have to be that way.
That is a fascinating perspective. We know, you all know, that death is predictable in about 90% of the cases. Only about 10% of death is sudden and unexpected. So in Permission to Die, aren't you talking about kind of facing reality and having these kind of gut-wrenching conversations before, which allow you to live your best life possible? Is that...
I hear what you're saying, and I think one of the things that I would like to share, and I would imagine that Stuart and Eric do as well, is that when we go back to our very first experience, which is our first chapter, and that was our first experience with death... As we sit here today, we're very comfortable talking about this very fear-inducing act, right? The final act, the act of death. And yet at that first experience, we weren't. And I think that's something that's extremely important to understand, is that it took incredible amounts of exposure, allowing us to be fearful and allowing us to have that sensation of anxiety over and over and over again to be able to reduce our anxiety. And I think it takes people that, and one of the things that has certainly helped for me is having multiple conversations with families and showing them that this isn't something to be afraid of. That I think, stresses that importance of having the conversation.
So would you agree, or something else you want to add to it?
I think what makes this so difficult to talk about is that it's so unknown. And I think we're very uncomfortable talking about something we don't know a lot about. I mean, we all talk about knowing what it's like to go through the dying process because we've done it a bunch of times. But ultimately, we've never died before, so we don't know what it's going to be like for real. And I think it's scary when we talk about something that we don't truly know the answers about. And it's scary. I think that's what makes it so hard to talk about.
So the rabbi's not here tonight, but is that a spiritual side of the dying
and I really
process?
I think that's why having him be a part of the authorship was so so great.
You know, it's funny. We don't even talk about it amongst our loved ones or the friends. I just thought about it from something you said. I have a best friend. I talk to him virtually every day. He's the brother I've never had. He's a year younger than me. We were partners in business many years ago. We are as close as two people can be who are not related. And he's had two bouts of cancer, and I've had my own health issues over the last couple of years. And I didn't know that he was thinking about dying and being afraid of dying. And he didn't know I was too. And I don't know how it happened, but we didn't dwell on it. We really didn't. But people are thinking about this, and yet they're not doing anything about it. Am I right?
I think that people don't want to think about it. We're all superstitious. When I watch my football team, I sit in a certain chair. I push the remote in a certain fashion.
You're referring to Alabama.
Fly Eagles fly. Well, but so the superstition extends to if we talk about it, it might happen. And we don't have words. And that's, again, going back to the if we've never had the conversation, if we've never said the words out loud, then the fear, going back to what Stu said, and Rabbi said this before the last time we spoke, we talked about what he found was one of the most compelling things, and he said it's the family who's going to be here, the fear, and the person who's going to die, the fear of that incredible unknown, which we that's one thing that nobody knows. And so if we just don't talk about it, if we put it in another room, if we compartmentalize it, perhaps it won't happen.
What can I say? What's the most surprised you since the publication of the book? Have there been any surprises?
Just the emotional reaction that people have had to our stories, the emails that we've received, and I've shared some of them with you, and the reviews that we've received at the depth of emotion that people are expressing with regard to the specific stories. I've had people actually send me messages quoting lines that I wrote, you know, and saying this really stirred me and this moved me, and I've never thought about emotion in that way. And to your point and what we were speaking about, I think that's one of the things that we fear, is that I could very quickly and easily talk to each of you in this room about my feelings about death and about what my last wishes are. I don't know that I could do that as well or as easily with my children or with my husband, because that would elicit emotion that I don't know that I would be prepared to actually experience. And I think that's one of the disconnects, is I'm very comfortable with my friends and with my colleagues experiencing their emotion, but with someone that you actually have that relationship and that kinship with, the emotion is expressed in a completely different way. And I think that's what some of our readers are experiencing, that emotion at that guttural level.
Yeah, I have no doubt, because for all of us that have experienced death of somebody we love, no matter how expected, no matter how anticipated, in some cases maybe no matter how welcome, if somebody's suffering, it is an unbelievably powerful emotion. The book is called Permission to Die. Four authors, three of whom are here tonight. The rabbi has been given absolution, so he doesn't have to be here. But Dr. Stuart Bagatelle, Dr. Eric Kramer, and Kelly Kintz, who is a licensed clinical social worker, are my guests. We are talking about permission to die. As soon as we come back, we're going to talk about how you even start the conversation, because that's really the problem. Is we can all talk about it, but we don't even know where to begin. We don't know when to begin. We don't know how to begin, and we don't know how it's going to go over. So we need to have that conversation. If you're just tuning in, of course, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We're here every Monday night on 95.9 FM True Oldies and 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. If you're listening on Long Island, 103.9, we're glad that you're with us. We hope you had a good day. I hope the snow is gone, because it snowed again this week. But here on here in Palm Beach County or on the Treasure Coast, if you're listening live, please drive carefully if you're in the car. If you have any questions for my guest or you want to talk about this, feel free to give us a call. It's 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. Here tonight with three of the four authors of a fascinating and most important book. It's a book entitled Permission to Die. We're going to talk about a whole host of things that title maybe conjures up in your head. We're not talking about death panels and assisted suicide, but we are going to have that conversation before the show is over. I'm here with Dr. Stuart Bagatelle, Dr. Eric Kramer, and Kelly Kintz. Kelly is a licensed clinical social worker. Dr. Kramer is a noted local area neurologist. And Dr. Bagatelle is a primary care internal medicine physician at JFK Medical Hospital and I guess director of the ethics committee. Is that the right title?
Sounds good.
as long as I don't call him late for dinner. Mm-hmm. Anyway, before we broke, I asked the question, said we were going to talk about how do you start the conversation? I know, Stuart, you had some thoughts about that.
Yeah, for me, when I'm in my office practice, you know, this conversation comes up really in two ways. You know, the first one is when I'm working with a patient during their annual physical exam, and while I'm talking about cancer prevention or weight loss or cardiovascular disease prevention, at the end, I often and will remind myself to ask that person, so what happens if you're in a hospital and you can't speak for yourself? Who's going to make that decision for you? So I think normalizing it, making it a part of regular visits from the get-go, I think normalizes it for the person and makes them more comfortable to talk about it, so that when they're in that later stage, when they're in their 80s, 90s, and facing a serious illness, and then I ask myself, well, is this person, would I be surprised if they were to die within the next year? That's a very different conversation. But hopefully I've had that conversation and normalized it throughout my relationship with that person.
Is that, I guess no longer, but is that ever an uncomfortable conversation for you? Do you get a lot of pushback?
Well, sometimes, you know, you get that young 50-year-old who says, what, is something wrong with me? You know, is something going to happen? No, I have this conversation with all my patients. It's a normal part of planning. You know, I think you said it well. You know, what happens if you don't make it home tonight?
Right.
What's going to happen?
Right.
And that's important.
Admittedly, I stole that from somebody who's
a
lot smarter than me. So you guys, both Kelly and Eric, must have opinions about how you actually start the conversation?
my goal, my emphasis here is for people to be able to have the conversation outside of the medical professional relationship. So my goal is to try and plant seeds through these type of radio programs, through the book, just casual conversation, to go back and when I'm at the Dunkin' Donuts with the guys hanging, or I have a Tuesday morning at JoJo's down on Lantana with a series of guys, when we're having these conversations and we're curing the world's problems, that we could also potentially touch on this type of topic too. I think Kelly's point about the emotions that are tied to this and the things that prevent the initiation of the conversation, and Stu's definition that we can try to normalize this topic, is the thing that would go a long way. It's very hard to bring up the conversation casually. My wife always says to be happy and talk about positive things when I'm out socially. This would not qualify as one of those. So in doing it, it has to be done in the right way with the right people. But mostly what I would do when I try to do this is talk about my own personal experience and something happened to me and it brought this up. And what do you think about the possibility of not being here? And have you thought about it? And putting it in a questioning perspective. But it has to be non-threatening, and it has to be in a place where people are ready to have that type of conversation.
I think one of the things, just to build on what both of you have said, one of the things that strikes me is if we can actually change the paradigm with which we have this conversation, and we can actually say, I'm not having this conversation with you because something is wrong. I'm having this conversation because I want to help empower you, because I want you to be able to take control emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually of a situation that we truly don't have control over. And so in that situation, what do you want? What's important to you? And really start that conversation in a non-crisis situation, allowing people to actually think, because we all know none of us think during times of crisis. We actually can't process a lot of information when we're anxious or fearful. So doing that and really telling people that you can actually have what you want and not what doctors are actually directing you to have, but we have to think through in advance and really put that in writing, or at least share that with somebody who loves you and cares about you.
Are you, all three of you, surprised at how little people have thought about this, or how much they have thought about it? Or doesn't it matter?
I think it's not surprising that people think about it a lot but just don't talk about it. I mean, surveys have been done to show that most patients really want to talk about this issue, but most don't. And so it doesn't surprise me that there's so much, you know, positive energy surrounding this, surrounding this book.
We're going to talk about hospice later, but that's actually the fallacy in hospice, is that people think hospice is only for the last 2 days of your life, and nothing could be further from the truth. But we'll come back to that for you. Do you find the people on the other side, if they've given it any thought, or even if they haven't, are contemplative, or are they demonstratively sure of what they want? You know, because if you'd asked me 10 years ago what I wanted, it would probably be different than what I think I want today.
Yeah, I'll tell the story of one of my mentors, who was a very well-known, very well-respected physician in Philadelphia. Years ago now, had tried to be extremely thoughtful and ahead of the curve, and he had signed all types of advanced directives, and no, he didn't want any life-sustaining, life-support treatment whatsoever. And then he was unexpectedly faced with a catastrophic event, and he absolutely changed his mind and totally, and was surprisingly successful in recovering from his event. And he would openly talk about how you just don't know, no matter how much thought you put into it. But this is not really, again, the issue, what we would do at that moment, what we would do at that crisis moment. It's how do we want to prepare? How do we want our lives to be? We're going to pass away, and
well, you are. I have no intention of leaving.
Well said, and there you go.
And I think your point, Scott, about how you're your thoughts have changed over time is consistent with what we know in research, and the importance of this being not a one-time conversation. This is a conversation that happens mm-hmm. over the course of several visits, and that's why it's so important to develop that relationship with someone that you trust in the medical field that can help you walk through this.
And I want to talk when we come back about that it's not a solitary decision either, that this goes beyond just what you think you want for yourself, even though that is obviously the overriding decision in this. But if you don't tell anybody, it's a big problem. If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg on Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We're here live every Monday night from 6 to 7 p.m. on 95.9, True Oldies. 106.9, also True Oldies, because it's the same show on the same station. 103.9 Long Island's Talk Radio on Wednesday evenings. And we rebroadcast again early on Sunday morning for you early birds. If you're on 95, please drive carefully. If you're home, I hope you're enjoying that glass of wine or dinner or whatever. Good glass of wine now and then may prevent you from having to deal with what we're talking about tonight. But if you have questions for my guests, and my guests are Kelly Kintz, Dr. Eric Kramer, Dr. Stuart Bagatelle, they are three of the four authors, along with with Rabbi Fratello, Anthony Fratello, of a book, an important book, a book you should read. And you should commit to memory, Permission to Die. We'll talk more when we come back. If you have any questions, call us, 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were station might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, and So Is My Mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. If you're just tuning in, you're missing a great show. We are talking to the authors of a very important book called Permission to Die. It's a conversation that must be had, and very few people actually wake up in the morning and think, boy, I really have to have this conversation. But we've been discussing why it is so important. We've been discussing how to start the conversation. But one of the areas that I want to move into now is who should be included in this conversation. This is not just what I want to do, but it involves more than one person. And I have a personal story, which I'll tell when we get to the end. But this is really kind of a family decision or something?
Well, I think one of the things that we always suggest is just to ask yourself that question, who do you want to talk to? And that could be a spouse, that could be a friend, that could be a child. But it has to be identified ahead of time, right? And then obviously your healthcare providers are involved in that. That's a decision that's different and individualized for everybody. So that first question is, who do you want to share this very important information with? Who is the most important person to you that you want to know so that you can actually trust them and hold them accountable for relaying your wishes to your healthcare provider?
It's interesting.
The book is entitled Permission to Die for so many reasons, but one of them is so that each of us gives ourselves permission to die. And in consciously and concretely doing that, it allows for a lot of freedom to choose to design that positive experience and to create the memories that we wish to leave. So in terms of with whom the conversation should be had, it's really those people who are important to an individual. What we have all found, and Stu in the ICU and Kel in the ICU and myself, what is a tragedy, an absolute tragedy, is when a family member comes and they end up disagreeing with another family member because there was no communication preemptively, and there are emotions that are flying, and there are whether they're physical fights or emotional fights or spiritual fights and disagreements, that's not something that anyone wants to see or needs to have, so that the conversation can be held with as many or as few, but should be held with those people who are involved at a personal level.
And the wounds from those disagreements last or can last forever. They can destroy previously good relationships. Do you have anything to add, Steve?
Yeah, and I think that's a great motivator for my patients. You know, I'll share experiences that I've had with other families that have gone through it. And once I tell them that you can avoid that conflict by just having this conversation up front, they're much more amenable to going through and having that conversation.
So I have a personal story, which I may have told the last time you were on the show. If you did, I'm sorry. But my father died. He was in Las Vegas, and we're Jewish, which I think everybody who listens to the show knows. But my father in his entire life spent every penny he ever made, and many he didn't. He lived above his means his entire life. And when I walked into the funeral home, we had been there. My father really didn't want to die. In fact, he was in hospice it was like Hanukkah. He was only supposed to make it through one night. Six nights later, he was still there. His wife finally said to him, "Donald, if you don't die tonight, I'm going to kill you." I know it's not supposed to be funny, but they did say that. I walked into the funeral home, and he was in a plain pine box, which is tradition for us. And if the rabbi were here, he could talk to that. But it is very traditional for us to be buried in a plain pine box. My father was a lot of things. He was not a plain pine box kind of guy. So I did what any self-respecting son would do. I wrote a check for $5,000, gave him the most beautiful casket you ever did see. I put him in the casket, which everybody saw for 30 seconds because it was a graveside funeral. And then he was lowered into the ground in this very ornate casket, which I just spent a whole lot of money on. The truth of the matter is, to this day, I have no idea what my father wanted. I have no idea. And when I asked his wife, she had no idea what he wanted. They had never talked about it. She made the decision about the plain pine box because it was tradition. But I clearly made that decision for me in hindsight. I didn't think I was doing that at the time, but today I'm wiser. I did that for me, and I didn't do that for him, or maybe I did do it for him. The truth is, I don't know. I mean, he may be cursing me from wherever, from beyond forever for this. I had good intentions, but the truth of the matter is we need to bring people into this conversation because, as I said earlier in the show tonight, death is a time for celebration, mourning, but also a time for celebrate people's lives. Kelly?
One of the things that comes up for me as you're sharing your story is twofold. First, there's many things that we do in the ICU and their emergency room environment that are for the family members and not necessarily for the patients, because the families are expressing so much emotional angst. Secondly, one of the things that I see in my private practice is longstanding depression and longstanding anxiety sometimes is based in longstanding grief, or excuse me, longstanding guilt and shame.
Right.
And I think that's what I hear coming up for you is a lot of times when we actually have people who don't understand, they haven't asked those questions and they have guilt about what they should have, right? That judgment word, what they should have done or should have asked, then that actually develops into something that we end up dealing with for quite some time,
right?
That there's just this perseverating grief and the perseverating guilt and perseverating shame, which ends up developing into something that could have been avoided had the conversation been thorough.
And the truth be told, I didn't think about it for myself until I started talking about it for others.
Not.
And then I woke up one day and said, hey, well, I can't say what I really said because we're on radio. It's one of those George Carlin words. But I have thought about what I did, and I recognize that what I did was probably not necessarily the right thing. Anyway,
You did what was right in the moment.
I did what was right at the moment, and that's what there. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here tonight with three of the four authors of a wonderful book called Permission to Die. I'm here with Kelly Kintz. I'm here with Dr. Eric Kramer. Here with Dr. Stuart Bagatelle. Dr. Bagatelle is a primary care physician and internal medicine specialist. Dr. Kramer is a neurologist. Kelly Kintz is a licensed clinical social worker. And the fourth author, as I said, got absolution tonight because he's a rabbi, Rabbi Anthony Fratello, who couldn't be here tonight but is nonetheless one of the four authors. So the book covers a broad spectrum in the subject matter of permission to die. When we come back, a really, really important conversation, we're going to talk about death panels and those assisted suicide and how this conversation is not that conversation, and we want to make that clear. So I hope that you're still with us, and if you just tuned in, you missed a great show. I'll tell you how you can catch up later. But if you have any questions, call us at 1-877-960-9960. 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm talking tonight about Permission to Die. Permission to Die is a wonderful book. It's been out about 6 months. Three of the four authors are here in the studio. Rabbi Anthony Fratello is otherwise engaged because it's Passover and he's a rabbi and he's got a lot on his plate. But Dr. Stuart Bagatelle is here. Dr. Eric Kramer is here. And Kelly Kintz is here, a licensed clinical social worker, who are in fact the authors of this most important book talking about Permission to Die. And we're going to tell you, actually, why don't we tell? How can people buy the book? We haven't mentioned that yet. How can people get the book?
Thank you. We're so fortunate to be able to have the book available on Amazon.com. And we will be actually involved in a book signing this weekend at the Bookseller in Lake Worth. So the Bookseller is a bookstore in the Lake Worth area, and they're actually going to be selling our books for us starting on Sunday. So we're very excited about that. 2:00 Sunday.
And where in Lake Worth?
I will find that address.
You'll find it out before we end the show.
I
know that.
I have it.
Well,
right,
I'll tell
here.
You what, it's a powerful world we live in with Google. Anyway, I know one of the things when people talk about this kind of conversation about permission to die, they automatically jump the gun and go to assisted suicide. And that couldn't be further from the truth as it relates to this book. Am I right?
Absolutely. Personally, professionally, legally, I'm not for physician-assisted suicide. I
mean, okay.
I'll put that out there. And so this book has nothing to do with that. What it is about is it's about patients' rights. It's about what your rights are to choose the life you want to lead, whether you have capacity to make those decisions or not. You know, you'll talk to your physician while you have capacity, and then if and when you lose that capacity, your decisions can still live on. So it's really all about patients' rights. It's not about ending someone's life,
And I would take this totally out of the medical context. This is about what we want to talk about and how we want to prepare ourselves and our families. And in many ways, having the conversation of permission to die is actually giving permission to live, but live freely, and to go back to what Kelly was saying, to live without shame and to live without guilt and to live without fear. So this does not have, in so many ways, a scientific or a medical or a medico-legal context. This has a, hey, this is real. This is what's going on. I want to go to the movies. As Stu has said, do I want chicken? Do I want fish? This is about real life decision making and conversations. It's not about a medical, scientific, legal issue.
So this isn't about how you want to die so much as it is about how you want to live the rest of your life, the time that you have left. Is that a fair analysis?
I think it is. And I think those of us that have had that conversation, there's a sense of freedom in having that conversation, that we can step forward and know that our wishes will be adhered to and honored, and we don't have to have fear about that conversation. We can actually let that go, which allows us to be more present and more in the moment, not so fearful about these things that are so very difficult to talk about.
when the conversation is had and everybody's on the same page, that kind of allows everybody to go back to doing what they want to do, right? That's probably not the right words, but
I remember when my when we had the conversation with my grandmother, it was 6 months before she actually died, and I brought home this new thing called the Conversation Project, which I encourage everyone to look at. It's a great way to, you know, you ask the question, how do you get the conversation started? That's a great tool to use, Conversation Project, and you can go online and look for it. But one of the questions at the end of this whole questionnaire that the patient goes through is, when do you want to have this conversation again? And my grandmother, who had gone through the conversation, we had this beautiful dinner at the end, said, I don't want to have this conversation again. I'm done. I've already told you what's what, and we'll move on. And that was it. So, you know, for some, it's just a freeing experience to say, I've gotten my thoughts out there, and now let's just move on.
Right. So let's talk on the same subject matter. I know a couple of you are very involved in the PULSED movement, Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. People think if you have a healthcare surrogate or a living will or a DNR that you've got everything you need. And I know it's a much bigger topic than that, but can we have an explanation of what PULSED is, where it's appropriate, and why it's important?
Yeah, I'll take that. So, you know, in the state of Florida, you can sign a do not resuscitate order, which is very clear. If you're found without a pulse and you're not breathing, then CPR won't be performed. But 99.99% of the time, we're all taking care of patients. They have a pulse and they're breathing. That's why we do what we do. And so knowing someone's code status doesn't really help you care for that patient in the moment. A pulsed order set goes into a lot more detail than just, what do I do when I find you without a pulse and breathing? Goes into things like, would you ever want mechanical ventilation if you were suffering with an illness that was causing you to get more short of breath? Would you ever want artificial nutrition? Would you even want to be taken to the hospital? So all of those decisions before the code event happens can be outlined in this order set that is then followed by the healthcare team. You see, it's an order. It's a medical order, not just the suggestion. Living wills are a patient-directed document that says, this is what I wish for. But it has to follow, you know, the Florida statutes. You know, certain criteria have to apply. It's very strict. And so oftentimes it can't be applied to that situation. A pulsed, an order set, is medically, it's actionable, right from the
get-go. And a physician does that.
And a physician writes the order. It's a prescription, if you will, for someone's end-of-life care.
Right. I know for those, just in the spirit of full disclosure, I had major surgery a few years ago, and I filled out a pulsed form that Stuart helped me write, where I was pretty clear about I don't do vegetable well, and I thought I could come out of surgery. I had pretty complex spine surgery, and I was worried about that. But then I realized somebody once said to me, well, what if you're going to be in a coma? Do you not want to be – do you want any intervention? And I said, no, I definitely don't want any intervention. I don't want to live that way. And said, what if you're only going to be in a coma for 3 weeks? And I thought, damn, I never thought about that. So it's really important to have this conversation. Anyway, if you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with three wonderful, wonderful guests, Kelly Kintz, Dr. Eric Kramer, Dr. Stuart Bagatelle. They are three of the four authors of a book called Permission to Die. We are going to tell you how you can get a copy of that book and how you can go get a copy and have them sign the book this weekend in just a minute. But first, if you're sorry that you missed the show, and you should be, don't ever let that happen again, you can get it, if you'd like, by going to TuneIn Radio. That's TuneIn. Well, that's not how you can get it. You can go to podcast. We podcast. All you have to do is search OMG, I Am Getting, on the Apple podcast platform. OMG, I Am Getting, and up we'll pop this and any other show. It's also available on my website, www.palmbeach.com. www.palmbeach.comfortcare.com. It'll be available as early as tonight, but probably not till about noon tomorrow. You can listen to this and to any other shows. Just hit the radio icon and then we'll be there. If you don't have a radio, you do have a smartphone, so there is no excuse not to be listening. TuneIn Radio is a free app available on all platforms, and you can, in fact, listen anytime you want. And, of course, we do simulcast www.trueoldiesfla.com. We simulcast locally, nationally, and internationally. Next week, I have a very, very interesting guest. Liz Lowy is going to be here. Liz is an elder fraud, abuse, and exploitation expert with significant experience from her role as the founder and former chief of the Elder Abuse Unit in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. She is the founder of a company called EverSafe, along with a fellow named Howard Tischler. They'll both be here next week. I'm very excited to have them here live in the studio. They're going to be talking about how you can protect yourself, not just from elder fraud, abuse, and exploitation, but how, even remotely, you can identify changes in patterns that might indicate that something is going on. Liz was, as I said, in the prosecutor's office for the Manhattan District Attorney. She's worked on some very famous cases, including Brooke Astor. She worked with somebody who's been on my show, Philip Marshall, who was Brooke Astor's grandson. She's very passionate about this, and you're not going to want to miss that. In 2 weeks, I always tell people, I ask people all the time, who wants to go to a nursing home? And everybody says, not me. Unfortunately, 85% of us will spend some time in a skilled nursing facility. More often than not, it will be in rehab. We're going to go there for rehab at some point in our lives. Well, next 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to the medical director at St. Mary's Rehab, and she's going to explain all about rehab, what you don't know, more than you ever thought you should know, but it'll be a very positive and helpful show. So tune in 2 weeks when we talk about rehab with the medical director of St. Mary's Rehab Center. But I am still here tonight with my guests and their book, Permission to Die. Kelly, again, how do people get a copy of the book?
First, Amazon.com. They can order it and have it delivered to them. This week, our authors will be appearing at a book signing. The bookseller is at 801 Lake Avenue in Lake Worth, and we will be there starting 2:00 in the afternoon on Sunday.
2:00 in the afternoon. That's great. I've read the book. It's a fascinating piece. It's very emotional. It's really, really important. We only have a couple of minutes left. Final thoughts from you guys that you want to talk? No? All right, I have some final. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
There's too many things to say in just a few minutes, so what I would say is I really thank you for giving us a platform and an opportunity to be able to discuss this and get it out into the public, and whether or not someone gets it at the bookseller or looks for it on Amazon, any of us can be reached at our professional locations if someone wants to inquire, and appreciate again. Thanks, Scott.
It's really a pleasure. I'm glad that you were able to come back, because I think this subject matter is so important, and so many people avoid this subject. I mean, truthfully, this is a subject that really needs to be had. It's a topic that people shy away from. It's like the hospice conversation. We don't have enough time really to talk about hospice, but for those of you who are listening, Dr. Leonard Hawk's going to be here from Trustbridge in a couple of weeks talking about hospice. What you're really talking about is how to live the best life possible for whatever period of time you have left. Stuart?
Yeah, and I think my main takeaway from this is that, you know, those of you who are going through your own personal illnesses or your family's illnesses, that you're not alone, you know. And I think if you read this book, you'll realize that your caregivers, your medical providers, they're all humans along with you, and they're walking the road with you, so you're not alone.
And that's really very important. So if you're a new listener, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. We are here every Monday night live from 6 to 7. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. It runs the gamut. We've talked about the Constitution, talked today about permission to die. Next week, we're talking about elder fraud and abuse, and we're going to be talking about strokes in a few weeks. So we run the gamut, and it's always interesting. It's always fun. I always have well-versed, knowledgeable guests, and I hope that if you're new, you will continue to listen to us. If you're a regular listener, what can I say other than thank you? Every Monday night from 6 to 7 on 95.9 FM True Oldies, 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, 103.9 Long Island's Talk Radio up in New York, and repeat the show every Sunday morning. So I want to thank you all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We'll be back here next week, 6 o'clock. Have a good night, all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom.